I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. How have the first weeks of the Trump administration affected you? That's a question we're asking this morning, and the BBC wants to hear your answer. The renowned British news service is in studio to learn how life here in the heartland is being affected by President Trump's executive orders and policies. From the refugee immigration ban now working its way through the courts, to repealing the Affordable Care Act, to getting tough on crime, we'll be asking you to call us with your opinions as President Trump moves ahead with keeping his campaign promises. It's an international edition of Up to Date after this hour's news. The BBC is here. The famed British broadcaster is here to assess what the Kansas City area makes of President Donald Trump's first few weeks in the White House. The BBC wants to understand how some of his first policies are affecting life in this community, crime, health care, and of course, the immigration ban. Excerpts from our conversation today may well wind up on the BBC's Newsday program, on which our guest, Shaima Khalil, appears. I want to introduce Shaima Khalil right now. She's just returned from Pakistan, where she's worked as the BBC's correspondent in Islamabad. She's Egyptian, has vast experience in international news reporting, and it's great to have her here. And Shaima, welcome to Kansas City.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
We want to hear from our listeners as well on the immigration and travel ban to begin with. What impact has this had on the Kansas City area? Mayor Sly James just said that there's been a definite impact, but we want to know what you have to say about this. Give us a shout, 816-235-2888 is the number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. And Shaima, you're going to share hosting duties with me here this morning, but first, give us a sense of why the BBC World News Service is in the U.S. and what you guys are after.
Well, I think, first of all, it's great to be here. And, you know, in the World Service, we say that we're always proud to bring the world to our listeners. And the biggest story in the world by far is what's happening in the United States at the moment with the Trump presidency. But in a bigger context, it's also a part of a road trip that I've been doing in different areas of the United States. I was fortunate enough to be among the team of presenters who cover the elections on election night. I was in Washington, D.C. And, you know, whichever way you look at it, this was a historic moment. It was one of the biggest political upsets in modern American history. And so to be part of that and then to travel around and get reaction was quite eye-opening. We came back as well to the lead-up to the inauguration, a week leading up to the inauguration. And during that time, again, with the road trip, we went to rural Pennsylvania. We went to industrial Ohio. We went to what Donald Trump described as forgotten America. And I was really keen to just get a little bit of a sense of what Trump supporters wanted from him, you know, the promises that they wanted him to come good on. And of course, now we're almost a month into the Trump presidency. There have been so many executive orders, so many tweets, so much controversy. So we wanted to know what people in Kansas City are talking about in the midst of all of this.
Well, just for the record, Shaima, you mentioned Donald Trump and immigration in the same sentence, and the board lights up. We have a full board already here. What's your team curious to hear from residents in the Kansas City area? What do you hope to get out of this?
Well, I want to know, and we want to know what the conversation in Kansas City is, because, you know, like I said, in the BBC and in the media in general, we cover the policies a lot. We cover the impact of the executive orders a lot. We cover the controversy. But what I'd really like to know is, you know, for your listeners and the ones that are lighting up the board at the moment, the call board at the moment, what exactly is this? What effect is this having on their lives? Is what's happening in Washington behind closed doors actually resonating in, you know, around kitchen tables,
right,
you know, in houses around the city? We'd like to hear that.
You chose Kansas City. Why?
Well, interestingly enough, if you Google Kansas City, one of the nicknames is the heart of America. And that's exactly where we want to be. We want to be in the heart of America. I mean, there are so many reasons. Jazz was my number one selfish reason. We talked about that.
Very good reason to be here, by the way.
But also, I think that we wanted to get away from the big cities. We wanted to get away from the two coasts because, you know, that part of America gets a lot of coverage. And again, we just wanted to come to an area where we don't hear a lot from. But also, I think Kansas City is very interestingly placed because it's this, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of like this Democratic bubble, if you will, or island in the midst of, you know, two big Republican states. And I'm really interested to know the dynamics in which all of the news and all of what's happening now is having on the people of the city and people around them as well.
Well, one person who knows dynamics is KCUR's Laura Ziegler, who's sitting here in the studio with us. And Laura, you're here. I wanted just to touch base with you for a moment before I go to some calls. You covered the story of 9 Somali refugees, all from the same family, who were delayed from arriving in Kansas City just recently. Tell us about that family and where they are right now.
They're settled in a home in Northeast, and they arrived late at night last week after having been detained in Kenya, where they were in a refugee camp because of the executive order, and then they came through Chicago. But I think more important today, in reference to what Shaima is talking about, are these rumors that were flying around this weekend that had to do with the possibility that ICE was going to be making raids on churches, with people going to church.
This is the Immigration Service of the federal government talking about.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Post circulated on social media and went viral from somebody who turned out to be not a credible source, but it sent shockwaves throughout the immigrant communities and churches, and actually volunteers with advocacy groups showed up. They rallied really quickly, and they showed up at churches to, I don't know do what, but to be there as advocates in the event that this did happen. And I was on the phone yesterday with a lot of advocacy groups and immigration lawyers and people who said that they hadn't heard anything. And like I said, it did turn out to be not a credible source that was the origin of this rumor. However, as we've heard around the country, there were 40 detentions in New York. ICE sent out a fact sheet that talked about that in detail. My colleague Dan Margulies did some research on Friday when we heard this might be happening. Kansas was actually listed on a list of six states that were going to be where there were going to be these detentions. And Dan talked to a couple lawyers who did say that there had been detentions in Chase County and Butler County, which is down there in kind of southeast Missouri.
Right.
Actually, don't know if those people came from there, but there's a detention center there,
right,
so that they were being detained there. At any rate, you know, whether or not people were actually detained, it did send shockwaves throughout the community. And I've been talking to business owners and people in the Northeast community, which is the center of immigrant population in Kansas City. And they say people are coming into the businesses and scared and anxious and wondering what they should do. And should they travel? Should they leave the country? Should their families that are wanting to come visit come?
Wow.
So people are really anxious. I've read anyway that this is one of the intents of the enforcement, just to let people know. You know, we've heard a lot of this rhetoric. We want to let people know that we're going to crack down and enforce these laws.
Well, the BBC is here to talk to regular Kansas Citians about the impact of Donald Trump's policy. The first issue on the table, immigration. Let's go to some calls right now at 816-235-2888. Maria from Kansas City, Kansas. Maria, good morning.
Good morning. I work with a number of refugees from many of the countries that are listed on his ban, and people who were planning on, who have green cards, who were planning to visit family had to cancel, you know, at the last minute. And I said, don't, you know, when they asked advice, I said, don't go. I mean, you may not get back. That's just not right. I mean, green card holders are supposed to have the same rights as Americans, with the exception of not being able to vote. And they're protected by the, you know, by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. This is not ethical. This is not right. This is miserly on the part of this president.
Maria, it's Shaima here. I'm just wondering, in terms of the confusion that's been happening. You say that families don't really know what's going on in terms of information. You know, you work with a lot of refugees coming in. Do you feel that you have enough information to give them about what they should do next?
Not when someone rules by edict. I mean, who knows what he will do next, to be honest. The good thing is we do have a checks and balances system, and even though this president doesn't respect that and you know, maligns the judges who are going by our checks and balances, ideally now, you know, people can come in if they have their green cards, et cetera. But what if someone goes to visit family and something happens, he does something else, you know, that leaves you not knowing what to do, because this person, you know, does not follow essentially the way we normally govern in this country. I think it's very xenophobic of him not to accept refugees. We are the country that has accepted the least number of refugees of any other country in the world, from the countries that are war-torn in the Middle East now. And I think that, you know, our statue of liberty, that's shameful. You know, we are not a xenophobic country. The heart of America has heart, and we accept these refugees here, and they're accepted, they become part of our communities, and they add to our community. And I think that this president is trying to play on the fear of people who maybe have not had contact with immigrants in this way, and even to the point of having his spokespersons, you know, make up massacres, you know, so that people get frightened by these things. I think that's just,
Maria,
that's
hang on a second. Laura Ziegler wants to hop back in here.
I was just going to say the immigration order that was the executive order that was handed down on the 25th. In the wake of that, I was talking to a lot of agency officials, and they were just distraught. I mean, they had no clue what was going on, and they were just scurrying around trying to find out, because it's a pretty extensive order. You know, it's
Absolutely.
Got a lot of different sections and a lot of different provisions. And there's one provision, for example, that said that maybe states and localities would have more involvement. And, of course, Kansas and Missouri haven't been particularly welcoming. Kansas less than Missouri, but there's some question about whether Governor Greitens will continue that. So there were a lot of questions by authorities, agencies.
And just, Laura, on that, I'm interested to know. I mean, we've heard from Maria there, and obviously, you know, she works with immigrants, and she's very passionate about letting immigrants in. But I'm just wondering, from your experience and from people that you talk to, how do people in Kansas City feel about refugees here?
I think for the most part, they're pretty welcoming. I think that, you know, every time there has been a family coming in, there are dozens that turn out at the airport with welcome signs and wanting to say that you're welcome and we want you here. At the state level, it's been a little more ambiguous. Kansas was one of the first states to say to put a total ban on Syrian refugees when President Obama said he was going to up the number.
Because I'm wondering if the reaction from people in Kansas City, how reflective that is of the rest of Kansas, the state of Kansas or Missouri, because like we said, this is a Democratic bubble.
I think that's true. Would you agree, Steve?
Yeah, by and large, you know, there is the town out in western Kansas, Hayes or Garden City,
and
Liberal have become sort of melting pots and
have been
very accepting of folks coming across the border and others as well.
Because there's big meatpacking industry, a lot of agriculture business out there, and they need that labor. I will say, in the 90s, I did a story for NPR about how those communities were changing, Garden City and Dodge City, and there was a lot of tension. Now, I think over the last 20 years, that has evolved. I think people in the Midwest are known to be fairly nice people and fairly welcoming people, and I don't think that's totally a stereotype. I do think that there's something different. Our pace of life is a little bit different.
I'm wondering, though, if at any point since that executive order has come out that you heard from people saying, even if not publicly, come up to you and say, do you know what? Actually, he's right. We shouldn't let people in. We're quite concerned about security. Have you heard that point of view?
I have. I definitely have.
It's
and I think there are
there.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely out there.
I'm going to thank Maria for the phone call here. Maria, thanks very much. Let's go to Saeed from Lawrence. Saeed, welcome to Up to Date.
Yeah, hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks, Saeed. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. So basically, my it's both a question and a comment. And, you know, we look at the travel ban and other factors, I mean, other areas that this type of rhetoric coming out from the highest echelons of power will have effect. It already has been having effect. And I personally have felt it. I've seen other educators, researchers, from those are immigrants, have suffered, especially in the Kansas City area. I have been on the receiving end of threats, rejections, resistance, intimidation. So it's a long story. I mean, I could write a book on it. So there have been efforts to remove those Muslim educators who are viewed as who oppose the wars of Afghanistan and Iraq. So these things have been going on, and I just want to make a comment that these types of executive orders and the kind of stuff coming out from the top is making things worse vis-a-vis employment and prospects for many people in this area.
Shaima, hop in here.
Hey, Syed, it's Shaima here. It's really interesting what you say about your experience as an educator, and I'm just wondering, you know, as a Muslim educator, do you find that there is a lot of hostility towards you? From where exactly? Is it people, I don't know, is it students that you deal with? And also, how much of a, you know, political conversation is happening within educational institutions that you're witnessing?
Well, I have been teaching at different area colleges, four-year colleges, two-year colleges. I've been doing my own research, but at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, there has been total resistance to allow me in. There was a visa revocation in 2008, and I had to go through a harrowing experience at the University of Kansas. There was so much hatred that you will not imagine. And in the middle of a PhD program, they almost strike, basically almost destroyed my career. And I had to go through lots of hoops to resuscitate it. But still, even more recently at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, I worked with people, and then I was pulled off of the project without getting any credit on it. And then every time you go, they bounce you around, like, go to that department, go to this department. So there's a lot of rejection that is happening. People are unwilling. Those who want to help, they are helpless, because there's one or two, you know, professors that have the power. And, you know, I would call them racist openly, because I don't care. But they are the ones who run the shot. And people have already told me, well, you know, these are white guys. Go to them. They can help you. And so there's a lot of, you know, the negative environment around. In teaching, especially, they will try to remove you, like tell you, oh, you don't have any organization. I mean, you know, I tell, okay, if there's something wrong in your teaching, tell what is the wrong, right?
Yeah, Syed,
it's subjective to go and say, hey, you're not organized, and put other people in there. So that kind of stuff has been happening, and I have faced it.
Yeah, Shaima's got another question for you, Syed. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, Syed, if that's something that you've experienced after Donald Trump was elected, after the executive order. I mean, you do speak of an experience of having been negatively affected at your workplace. When exactly was that happen? Was it a long-term experience, or did that happen as a direct result of the Donald Trump administration?
Some of it has happened before, and I shrugged it off by saying maybe, you know, there was something wrong with me. But more recently, even student comments reflect some of those sentiments, especially after the election. It has become more overt, actually, I feel.
Syed, I'm glad you called. Thanks very much. We have one more question, Shaima?
No, I'm really just interested. You know, we heard from Syed, we heard from Maria, and I'm interested if anybody out there is listening that actually agrees with the ban, because, you know, Laura, you were saying that you did hear that point of view, and I'm really interested to hear it, to hear what people have to say. So if you do agree with the travel ban, if you do agree with the freeze on the refugee program, just, you know, give us a call. I don't know.
816-235-2888 is the number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Option two is to tweet us at KCUR. Up to date, Laura.
I will say, Shaima, we, as you know, having been in Washington, we heard so much rhetoric about this from the very beginning of the campaign. Yep. And over the course of the campaign, I think we were hearing about people who really conflate those incidents of terrorism, whether or not the people that perpetrated those incidents in San Bernardino or the Boston bombing during the marathon, people conflate whether or not those, you know, whether they were actual terrorists who had been radicalized in a terror, you know, in a country that fosters terrorism, or if they were just lone wolves who were doing this on their own. It created a culture of fear, you know, as it has in Paris and other places around the world. And people, you know, the people talked about how the campaign just made it okay for people to come out.
Absolutely.
And I think express their fears.
I think that's really interesting. And one of the things that I picked up, and let me know what your experiences have been throughout, you know, in the lead up to the elections, after the elections, and in the lead up to the inauguration, is that the one thing that people have come, obviously the Trump supporters, all have in common is that they'll tell you, do you know what? We've had these opinions. We've had, you know, we agree with those points of view. We weren't able to say them in public. And Donald Trump coming in with the rhetoric that he has, and of course many disagree with him, has made it okay for people to come out. But then on the flip side of that is that you get this idea that there was one part of America that just wasn't speaking to the other part mm-hmm. of America. Mm-hmm. And there were two different conversations that were being had parallel to each other, but just never having a meeting point.
I think there's a lot of that going on in America these days. People gravitating towards media that tends to agree with their viewpoints on everything. I'm sure it's happening in London as well. And it's a problem in the mass communications world, Laura Ziegler.
Well, look at our Congress.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty much a microcosm of that polarization.
I think we have a caller who might meet the criterion that Shima has set up here about Donald Trump and some folks who agree with his policies. Chad from Olathe. Chad, good morning.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Well, it's not so much that I agree with Donald Trump himself. It's just more that I really kind of relate to the fear that people have of refugees. And my singular issue is this. I'm not totally concerned about terrorists infiltrating our system like a Trojan horse. I'm concerned about people from a particular culture that is vastly different from ours, who could come over and possibly become radicalized, or such as we've seen in Cologne, Germany. I'm concerned that people will there will be a culture clash.
Interesting.
But isn't that what America is all about? Not the cultural clash, but you know, I'll give you an example of my personal experience. You know, I'm Egyptian. I was born and raised in Egypt. I grew up in Egypt, but my mother was a PhD student. She came here. We didn't really speak that much English. You wouldn't be able to tell that now. But you know, America was a place that me and my sister felt that it was home. It was accepting of me. It was accepting of my family. It was accepting of my mother. It gave my family huge opportunities, as it did for millions and millions of other people. And I think, you know, don't you agree, Chad, that one of the biggest strengths of America is that it can absorb people from different cultures?
Well, I'm not sure, really, because it's hard to say that everybody in America has anything in common, such as a value system that you know, would support immigration as much as a lot of people do. I mean, there are a lot of folks out there who aren't talking on radio shows or on news programs who don't feel that that's a value, who really just want to go to work and support their families, and they're not constantly or really ever thinking about, you know, what is our American value in relation to immigrants. There are a lot of people who are just busy, and they don't have time to really think deeply about those things. And of course, your own personal history demonstrates clearly why you're concerned about it. But what about people who really have no inclination to even think about that stuff? Why should they value that
right.
more
mm-hmm.
than, for instance, their own more proximate interests?
Hey, Chad, can I ask you a question? It's Laura.
Well, yes,
you talked about the culture clash, but then you said people who are concerned with just going to work. You know, a lot of what we hear about these people coming in is they're going to take our jobs. Is it more that? I mean, fear of what people might bring from their culture? For example,
yeah,
we've heard a lot about the Islamic culture coming to the area and imposing Sharia law. And that's been something that has been widely discussed, even at the state legislative level. Is it more cultural practices like that, or is it more economic, they're going to take our jobs?
I'm not concerned about anybody taking jobs, me personally, and I really wouldn't validate that concern myself, because I don't think that's a big issue. I want them to take jobs. That's good for us. What I'm saying is this. For instance, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there an event in Cologne, Germany, where refugees got together and protested because they weren't receiving certain public benefits, as maybe they should have? That's not for me to decide. And during the protest, a lot of violence apparently broke out. There were rapes. There were assaults. And these people were not terrorists. They were just refugees protesting, asking for equal rights.
I know.
And
Chad, sorry to cut you off. I know exactly the incident that you're talking about, because we covered it extensively on the BBC. But I'm just wondering why you choose one incident as a way to reflect on millions and millions of refugees. That happened once, and it happened in Cologne, Germany. I don't recall it happening anywhere else.
Understood.
Yet I've been giving that example so many times as to why people are worried about refugees.
Can I just explain?
Go ahead.
Sure. And just to clarify for myself and maybe for others who have that worry, no one can control what they're afraid of. And when you talk to people who are or who support Trump's quote-unquote ban or intensified screening process, you're talking to people who have a genuine involuntary fear. And no matter of logical reasoning or argument is necessarily going to sway their fear. And that is a legitimate fear. You say one instance, well, gee, I mean, if I'm driving down the road and I hear about one instance of somebody getting in a car accident who I know, I have the right to use that as a premise. I mean, I personally am worried. What's going, you know, we have a highly protesting culture right now. What's going to happen if we invite in, let's say, a million refugees, just like in Germany? And, you know, are these folks going to be sequestered? Well, no, they're going to be incorporated into society. And please correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm ignorant about this, but it's my common sense tells me that eventually they're going to want to be just typical citizens involved right. in our society. If that's the case, great. But if they're going to be sequestered and if they're going to be irritated and provoked into protesting and into blocking streets, and it's just the unification of everything we see, this causes a genuine, authentic okay. fear that I think people shouldn't be really, I don't know, criticized for.
And Chad, I appreciate you know, that. I'm gonna scoot on here, but I really appreciate the thoughts. I'm gonna get one more call before a break here. Mohammed from Kansas City, Missouri. He supports Donald Trump's ban as well. Mohammed, thanks for holding on.
You're welcome.
Go ahead.
So I just wanted to say I've been listening to the show, and I heard so many good comments actually. But the reason I do support the ban is not because anything personal against the people in the Middle East and in those seven countries that were listed as in this executive order. The reason I really support the ban is to the Arab countries. Arab countries, I'm talking about Saudi Arabia, I'm talking about Qatar, I'm talking about the UAE, Egypt, and other places. So they can feel the need and the urge, so they can open their borders for those refugees and they take them. What we've been seeing now is that those countries are taking a step back and letting the United States just take control of everything, and then they just go and complain about everything, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I'm interested, Mohammed. I mean, you say that you're talking more about policy, like a bigger policy that if the United States doesn't take refugees, that automatically pushes other countries in the Middle East to take them. I mean, there are a couple of points here. Is one, you that's not guaranteed for it to happen. If the United States refuses to take refugees, that just leaves refugees stranded with no place to go, because there isn't really a policy in place, and you can't arm twist any other country to take refugees like the countries that you've mentioned. But then the other thing, that I'm really interested in, and I'm really interested to get your point, is it's also about quality of life. When a refugee decides or has a chance to choose where to go, they choose the United States for a reason. They choose the United States because they know that they're going to have a better quality of life here, that they're going to have freedom of worship here, that they're going to have freedom of speech here. And these are rights not guaranteed to most of the countries that you've mentioned.
I totally agree with you. But on the other hand, there's so I agree with you on that matter, because if you look at the Palestinian refugees, for example, in Lebanon and in Syria, they've been prosecuted, they've been discriminated
Indeed.
Against until now, and this issue will never be resolved. Actually, as a matter of fact, one of the only resolutions that the Arab League took is not to accept the Palestinian refugees and not to make them not to give them a pathway to citizenship. But what I'm talking about is that the responsibility always the and I am by no means I'm not calling for like not to welcome the refugees in this great country. I myself is a refugee.
Really? Where from, if you don't mind me asking?
I came from Palestine. So the what I'm talking about is that always the politics in the Middle East is that every single thing that goes wrong, they blame the United States. I've been here for about 16 years, and I know that it takes a toll on the economy, it takes a toll on the families
themselves. I totally get that, but can I just take the place of a Syrian refugee that may be listening or may not. But if I'm a Syrian refugee and I'm hearing what you're saying as a Palestinian refugee that came here 15 years ago, that was welcomed in this country, that was able to start a life in this country, I would say, hold on a minute. Why are you denying me something that you were able to benefit from 15 years ago? What would you say to that?
So that is a great question, and I'm not denying anybody. What I'm saying is that if I had the chance to go to another Arab country at the beginning, I might have went there. But because there was no push to the Arab countries, this should be a political agenda for Trump. I don't think he's thinking about that, but he should engage into a dialogue with the Arab leaders to say there's an alternative road. When we bring refugees to the U.S., it's going to cost a lot of money, and it's going to cause security threats. I totally understand that. Not every single refugee is a peaceful refugee, and at the same time, not all of them are evil. But if they engage into a dialogue with the other Arab countries, the other Arab League,
But hang on a minute. Sorry, I'm really sorry to interrupt you there. What if someone had turned around 15 years ago and said, "Do you know what, Mohammed? I'm sorry, you can't come in because we think you're a threat." What would you say?
There's the extreme vetting that they are talking about.
Well, exactly. But right? nobody's denying that the refugees should be vetted. In fact, they are vetted. It takes such a long time for a refugee and a refugee family to be allowed in the United States. What we're saying is some people jump through all these hoops, and now, in the last hurdle, they're being told that they can't come in. I mean, can you appreciate how disappointing that is?
So let me take it to a different aspect here. For the refugees, a lot of those refugees, they don't speak the language, they don't know their culture, and they will have a cultural shock when
how was your English when you came in 15 years ago?
I studied in private schools when I was young, so my English was pretty good.
Great.
But this is not the point. My point was, I guarantee you that a lot of refugees would appreciate it if the other Arab countries opened their borders to them, so at least they have the same religion, they have the same language, they share the same culture. So if the president and the other Arab leagues have a meeting and talk about cooperation into how to accept those refugees in the Arab countries, you will have a much better outcome.
Okay, well, Laura Ziegler,
Mohammed, can I ask you one
second.
Quick
yeah.
question? Do you feel like the president is making overtures to those countries? His cozying up with Netanyahu so far hasn't indicated that he is very aggressively doing that kind of thing. Do you feel good about how Trump is proceeding?
I'm
going to
let Mohammed respond,
then
we're going to take a break, guys.
Sure.
Mohammed, go ahead.
Are you happy with how Trump has done so far?
There are a lot of things that he's doing that I'm totally against. And his cabinet picks, and especially the ambassadors to Israel, and his take on settlement and moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. But I think that was not the topic of this show.
Okay. Mohammed, I appreciate your comments. Thanks very much. Well, this hour, we're visiting with the BBC's Shaima Khalil about Kansas City's reaction to the first few weeks of the Trump administration for a program the BBC is doing. Let's scoot on here to health coverage. President Trump has signaled the abolition of the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. And from our listeners, we're wondering, we want to know what impact you think the president is having on the health care debate and how you'd react if the Affordable Care Act was struck down. What do you think? 816-235-2888 is the phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. In the meantime, I want to bring in Jim McLean to the program. Jim's with our Kansas News Service. He's been covering the ongoing debate over expanding Medicaid in Kansas. And Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you both.
You did a story last week that was interesting because it showed that the debate over expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act rages on unabated, even though Congress is working on repeal of the act. Jim, how does that work, and what's your story talk about?
Well, I don't know how well it works, Steve, and it's just beginning to rage, as you say. For the last 3 years, Kansas lawmakers have paid virtually no attention to the issue. Then, in the last election, a bunch of moderate Republicans and Democrats won legislative seats from conservative Republicans, and all of a sudden, Medicaid expansion advocates think they have the votes to actually do something. But as luck would have it, at least for them, when President Donald Trump won the White House, I think they were anticipating that maybe Hillary Clinton was going to win. All of a sudden, this repeal and replace debate is front and center. So now Kansas expansion advocates are in the awkward position of pushing forward a program that may or may not last beyond the next couple of months. And so, but they're still putting their shoulders into it, and there's going to be a vote in committee on Wednesday, and I'm told it's very tight, kind of a 50-50 proposition at this point.
Jim, how many states have decided to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act?
It just so happens I have that in my notes, Steve. 31 states and the District of Columbia have expanded, 19 have not, including, of course, Kansas and Missouri.
And what do we know about their costs in these states actually going up under the program? Do they,
right,
Jim?
Well, I'll tell you what happens. In many, many of the expansion states, they had projections for how many people would enroll, would take advantage of this new window of eligibility. And what has happened in those states is there's been a lot more demand for Medicaid services than anticipated. And, of course, that has the effect then of raising the cost. But, you know, the federal government for a couple of years, for the first 3 years, paid 100% of that additional cost. It's now ratcheting down slowly and will eventually, assuming the program stays in the books, get to 90% where it is supposed to stay in perpetuity. And that's a lot better deal than states get for their regular Medicaid programs. So much of that increased cost has been obviated and mitigated by the federal money,
right,
which, again, one of the big reasons why states want to do this, because, you know, Kansas, for instance, advocates for expansion have estimate that we've lost out, if that's the correct term, or foregone,
right,
about $1.7 billion.
Jim, I'm going to hop in here and get a call from Jody from Lee's Summit, who has just limited time. The question on the table, the impact of President Trump's administration early on when it comes to health care. Jody from Lee's Summit, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. My comment was that I will be 67, but my whole career I was so grateful to have insurance, and that was one of the perks that I looked for in employment, was for insurance. The whole world has changed now, or America has changed now, and people don't realize how very important that is, and to suddenly have people getting access to it, and now taken away, you know, you have to have plans. People need health insurance. We're the only one of the countries without general health insurance. And I think that is very, very wrong.
Jody, it's Shima here in the studio with Steve. I'm wondering what worries you more, the fact that the ACA is going to be repealed, or the fact that there is so much uncertainty as to what happens after?
I think there's very, very valid points to the American, whatever it is. I think it's very valid. There are some things because the Republican Party refused to participate, and that's the thing that really galls me. And for them to come up here and say, we're repealing it, and it's like, where were you 8 years ago? Where were you when it came time to put together a plan that would be beneficial for everyone? Instead, what did we get? We got under prescription drugs, which the American people have underwritten that. We got, you know, it's like we don't really have anybody representing the people. And this is what's irritating me.
Do you feel that an issue as crucial as health care, the difference between you being able to go to a doctor and get treatment and not, is being politicized?
I think that healthcare is as important to us in our day and age as drinking fresh water, as breathing clean air. I think healthcare, our whole country would benefit for general healthcare, and that's not it. It's not happening, and I feel so sorry for people who do not have healthcare. You know, it's a drain on society.
Jody, I appreciate your comments. Thanks very much. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. We're talking about President Trump's impact on health coverage. Let's go to Bob from Overland Park, who's self-employed. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. I have just one, a couple of things I wanted to say, but one was, as you've said, I'm self-employed. I'm a carpenter, and I've been on some job sites with some people that have been saying that they're totally against Obamacare, but they really like the ACA. They seriously believe that they're two different animals, and I can't convince them that the ACA and Obamacare are both exactly the same. They are backing Trump 100%, but they're going to lose their health care because they also use the ACA. I just finished a pretty bad accident on my finger. The ACA, if I did not have that, I would have been bankrupt. It was over $40,000 to reconstruct my finger. So these are things that, again, I agree with people like Sanders and the like that think the ACA or excuse me that healthcare should be a right in this country.
And I'm glad to hear that you're better, Bob. What are your plans? I mean, do you have any plans if this thing goes ahead and it's repealed? What will you do?
I certainly don't have a real plan right now. My wife and I have been looking into insurance without going through the ACA. It's cost prohibitive. I live in Kansas. The insurance cost to me, since I cannot get into a group, would be over $900 a month. Mm-hmm. And that's just, I mean, I can't afford it. So I'd have to go back to the crapshoot or the rolling of the dice and just hope that you don't get hurt or get sick.
That's not feasible, definitely.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not feasible. It's not right.
Bob, I appreciate your phone call. Thanks.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Let's go to Chris from Kansas City, Missouri. Chris, you're on the air. We're talking about President Trump's impact on health coverage in America. Good morning.
Good morning. I just had a comment about Mr. McClain's comment that on cost of Medicare when it goes up. When he says that Washington pays for the bulk of that, who does he think Washington is? That's still the taxpayers paying for it. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get his comment on that.
I think it's a good question. And what you hear, depending on which side of the debate you're on, what you hear from advocates is that is money, tax money that Kansans have sent back to Washington that is not coming back to Kansas, but it's going somewhere. California, Illinois, other states that have expanded Medicaid. So, yes, you're, of course, right that it's federal tax dollars, but some Kansans who are in favor of expansion feel like we're losing out on our share of that money in return. And, of course, people who are exposed to expansion, opposed to it, make the same argument you do, that it's not free money. Of course, it's taxpayer money, and it's an expensive program that many people are skeptical of the country's ability to afford. So, you know, you have that argument on both sides. But, again, Kansas expansion advocates make the point that there's $1.7 billion over the last 3 years that would have come back to Kansas had we expanded Medicaid.
Chris, I hope that helps.
It does, but I think we need to throw that up in the very beginning. But to say that Washington is going to pay for it, it's still the taxpayers pay for it.
Right. Appreciate the phone call, Chris. Thanks very much. I'm going to go to Lisa from Overland Park. Lisa, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to make the comment about the ACA and my support of it and the concern of people not being able to connect to health care insurance. I have found over time that one of the reasons why people get so emotional and so tied into the idea of healthcare insurance, we all at our fundamental core understand that that great healthcare crisis is coming for every single one of us at some point in our lives. We can't pretend, we can't look away. We all know that we're going to face that someday. And without healthcare insurance, that health crisis quickly becomes a financial crisis and a family crisis. And that's why people get so tuned into this and they start to recognize how important health care insurance is and access to health care insurance is. And to take away that access is so frightening to people at their very basic
poor.
And Lisa, that was actually going to be my question to you. Are you and your family, is that something that you discuss around your dinner table? Is that one of your main concerns now? What will you do if this happens?
We have discussed that, and we haven't come up with a very good answer. Mm. We have an adult son that depends on the ACA for health care insurance coverage, and without that insurance, what's he going to do, you know, if there's a major crisis that comes along, and, you know, health care crisis, whether he's 30, 50, or 70, we don't know. And that's where the uncertainty becomes so big and so intense.
Lisa, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'm going to get one more phone call here. Eric from Kansas City, Kansas. Eric, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Well, thanks, Eric.
I just want to comment. I have personally dealt with the Affordable Care Act. I have benefited from it. I was between jobs, and you know that was something that was available to me to use. I'm now currently reemployed, but I just want to comment. You know that having personally benefited from this you know Affordable Care Act, it really pains to see me watch these Republicans go through and you know, said they want to repeal it and replace with no coherent plan ready to go. And it's just, to me, very frustrating to watch someone kind of tear down, you know, the system like that.
Right. And, Eric, I'm going to have to leave our comment right there. And, Shaima Khalil, you heard a whole lot of stuff from a whole lot of people here today. I hope it was helpful.
It was really helpful. And it was really eye-opening, actually, the different conversations that people have had. I mean, especially about the immigration and the concerns that people have about it, the concerns that people have of people coming in, and the concerns that people have of stopping people coming in. And I'm sure this is a conversation that we're, you know, America's just going to keep having for the foreseeable future.
And these comments might wind up where?
Well, they're going to wind up on BBC Newsday. That's our news program, the breakfast news program on the BBC World Service, the biggest, we claim, news program in the world.
So good to have you here, Shaima.
Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
And just a reminder, if you can get your hands on a smartphone, you can record your health experiences for the BBC program, The Response. We'll have a link to learn how to do that on the UpToDate webpage. Tomorrow, a former budget director of Kansas discusses the state's financial crisis. Also, writing serves as a healing mechanism. That's tomorrow on the show. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Claire Tatakoro. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.